Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Today, it's gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning, Mindy.
All right, so it's hot and humid. Are we seeing any implications from this hot, humid weather in our gardens?
Well, the weeds are growing quite diligently in my garden because it's frankly too hot in the middle of the day to go out there and do anything about them.
Right.
So, you know, gardening in a heat wave is always tricky. We really have to time for our own health when we go out there. And, you know, I'm a big advocate of getting up very early, and if there are things that really need doing, I try to be out there as early in the day as possible. If I need to water, I want to water pretty much as soon as I get up. You know, avoid the heat of the day,
yeah,
both for your health and, you know, I'm not sure the plants really love you out there messing around with them when it's that hot.
Exactly.
It might not even be a bad idea in some instances for some crops to put up some shade cloth.
Oh.
Our climate has changed. We are hotter earlier and longer every year. So I'm thinking of maybe looking into some of the techniques that are used down south for gardening in hot weather. Shade cloth is the first one that comes to mind. They use that for a number of crops, and may not be a bad idea up here either.
You know, we took down a couple of trees, and underneath I had some beautiful hosta, which I knew once the sun started, I'm like, just watching it, like, you know, just get all brown. And but it's okay. I'll dig it up in the fall and move it. It'll be okay. Yeah.
Yes.
But whoa, hydrangeas are just magnificent this year everywhere you look. And I'm guess, you know, partly because we didn't get that deep freeze in early spring like we have the last couple of years, but also is because we had such a wet spring.
Well, it's a combination of factors. I totally agree with you. This is probably the best year for hydrangeas that I have seen. I can't even remember when it was this good.
Yeah.
I have probably too many hydrangeas in my yard. I have one that gifts me with seedlings, which I move around, so I have plenty of hydrangeas, and every single hydrangea in my yard is blooming, even ones that haven't bloomed in years. It's a combination. It was a mild winter overall. We had adequate moisture all winter and all spring, and we did avoid that deep freeze in April. We had one cold night that did a little bit of damage to some of the brand new foliage, but didn't seem to affect any of the buds.
Yeah.
And what we have as a result is just a spectacular bloom.
Yeah. If you have garden questions this morning for us, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. It's funny, Amy was reminding me, she had read an article about hydrangeas, and in the name, hydra, water. They take a lot of water.
They do like a lot of water. They don't want to be wet all the
right
time. You don't want to overwater them, but they are not what I would consider a drought-tolerant plant.
Mm-hmm.
Those that are in the shade or more shade than sun, I'm talking about mop heads, mm-hmm, the blue hydrangeas, tend to do better. I do have one that I put in. And it was a formerly shaded spot, and like you, I removed some plants and some branches from overhanging trees, and it turns out, gee, now it's in the sun. And so in the middle of the day when it's very hot, the plant looks totally wilted.
Yeah.
But it perks up after dark, not after dark, but after the sun goes down.
Yeah.
And I make sure that I'm not letting the soil go dry there. And in the fall, I will probably move it to a better location.
Yeah. I was at a Heritage Museum and Gardens this past week, and not only are there hydrangeas just absolutely gorgeous, everything is gorgeous. The whole place is just beautiful. So if you get a chance, you should head out and check out the gardens there.
Well, it's really been, so far, with the exception of this heat wave, it's been a wonderful growing season.
Yeah.
I have had to irrigate my garden a couple of times, but in previous years, it's like maybe twice or three times a week I'm out there moving the sprinklers around. And this year, I don't have to do that, which I'm very grateful.
I have not used the sprinklers at all. I've been watering, obviously, my container plants every day.
Yes.
But that's
yes,
it. Everything else is just, you know, has been fine. As a matter of fact, I started, you know, it was really overgrown. And I in the fall moved some things around and started to do that in spring, and it's great. It's kind of like as you're cleaning things out, I go, oh yeah, I forgot about that guy in the back who I haven't seen in a few years, right?
Yes, I know all about that. I'm looking forward to fall for a number of reasons, particularly the better weather in terms of still warm but not overly humid. But I haven't been able to really adequately address my garden in a couple of years, and now I want to get out there and tackle a lot of things that are overgrown, need to be cut back and or moved and or divided, and just do a really thorough job trying to get my my garden in order.
Yeah, it's never ending, right? I mean, you think you got it down, and then it's like, oh yeah, now I need to do this.
It's always something, and yeah. I can't remember who said it, but someone in history said something about a garden is never done until the gardener moves or dies.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, but I have to say, this year, my garden hasn't looked this good. I can't even remember how long, many years. It's really great. And my lilies are exceptional also this year. I'm just so thrilled with them. You know, I guess we're maybe done with that, or for the most part, the red lily leaf beetle. Remember, for years there, we had so many problems with that thing.
Yes, we did, and parasitic wasps and another tachinid fly was released sometime in the 90s throughout the Cape, and it really has made an impact on the lily leaf beetle. They're still around, but in numbers that are so low, the damage on our lilies are sort of, it's caused some cosmetic damage, but the plants aren't being decimated like they used to be. Yeah. I did cage my lilies this spring so the rabbits did not eat them, and oh my Lord, yes, they're going to be beautiful when those buds open up.
Yeah, they really and you know, the red lily leaf beetle was decimated. There's always something else, like we win one battle, and then now this year it seems to be the rabbits are just and we've talked about this before. I mean, it used to be they pretty much stuck to the clover. I didn't worry about them so much. This year I've been talking about the baby bunny in my garden in the backyard, who's actually gotten a little bit bigger, still cute and, you know, hungry. So I'm thinking, okay, pretty soon that, you know, that rabbit will be big enough, maybe it'll move on. I went out the front door last night, about to go out. I saw a rabbit, big rabbit, hopping out of the hosta that's right outside my door. And right behind it, two little baby bunnies. I was like, oh boy, here we go again.
I should probably look this up, but I believe, you know, the old phrase, breed like rabbits.
Yeah.
I believe they have multiple litters a year.
So. Yeah.
So those cute baby bunnies grow up and
then they have more.
They have their own cute little baby bunnies. Yes.
Yeah.
I had one. I just actually this morning, it was out in the middle of the lawn when I let the dog out. And I normally won't let the dog out if I see a rabbit. But the dog is old and his eyesight isn't as good, and the rabbit literally froze, didn't move a hair, and the dog walked right by him. So I said, oh, okay, that's fine.
Jenny just said 1 month rabbit gestation. Oh, yeah. No wonder we're seeing so many.
Wow.
And it's amazing how much they can eat.
Yeah. I mean, mine are still, for the most part, eating the clover, but I did see one larger rabbit. I have one of my beds fenced off. It's plastic fencing, held up with stakes, and it works pretty well. A very small mesh, baby bunnies can't get through it. I did see a larger rabbit leaning against it and bending it over and happily feeding on my pea stems.
Mm. Yeah, my peas got decimated. I had no peas. They ate it right down to the stub. Yeah.
The nubs.
Yep.
Well, it didn't discover the peas until I'm at the point where I'm pulling the peas out because they don't like hot weather and I've had multiple harvests, but I just thought, okay.
Mine didn't make it. And in years past, I have to say the rabbits have never jumped up into the raised beds. It's always been, you know, just pretty much the clover and maybe a little bit when the hosta is coming up in early spring, but I guess they've discovered there's other goodies around the yard, so they're having a good time. And Jenny says woodchucks are having an uptick around here.
I hate to hear that because there's nothing woodchucks are horrible. They eat everything. Fencing doesn't work on them. They climb right over on fences. I haven't, knock on wood, seen a woodchuck in my yard in, probably 15 or more years. And I'm hoping it stays that way.
Yeah, it's funny. I have a fenced-in yard, but as you said, the woodchucks can get over it. And it was probably 10 years ago. I walked out my back door, and I looked surprised at this woodchuck. This woodchuck looked very surprised at me, took off, and never came back. I was like, oh, that was good. But it ate all my broccoli before it left.
Oh, it loves broccoli. Yes. Yes.
Exactly. I know. I've been wondering about expecting with this humid weather to see some powdery mildew, but so far, knock on whatever this is, I haven't had any in my yard, but I hear some other people have been seeing powdery mildew.
I have seen powdery mildew on, I have a wonderful French heirloom melon that I grow, and it's planted along the trellis with the cucumbers. Just the melon has powdery mildew. I have not seen it on the cucumbers, so it is out there. I'm debating whether or not to do anything about it. Mm. It's just so hot.
Yeah.
I could go out early in the morning, and what I find is one of the better materials is the commercial preparation of baking soda. It's a potassium bicarbonate formulation that actually works very well on powdery mildew, but it's expensive and I don't have any at the moment. So do I save this one melon or or do I spend money? I haven't decided.
Yeah. Got an email that says, I have a flower bed of Indian summer rudbeckia that has begun to die over the last few weeks. Some of the plants have turned gray and fuzzy and I've had to pull them out. I've sprayed them with Revitalize antifungus and done a drench of neem oil. It hasn't seemed to make a difference. If I have to empty the flower bed of all the rudbeckia, will whatever is killing them stay in the soil? Can I plant in that flower bed again?
I would say yes. It sounds like it, when you say gray, I immediately do think of powdery mildew, and I believe rudbeckia do get a powdery mildew. Most powdery mildews are specific for their host plant. So you see a powdery mildew on a cucumber. It's a different organism than the powdery mildew on, a lilac or on turf. They're all different organisms, and they're just called powdery mildew based on the symptoms that we see, the grayish on the surface of the leaf. So yes, you could remove those and plant right now if you want something else. If you go by most garden centers, they're bringing in larger pots of annuals that look quite beautiful at the moment, and you could happily fill in the blanks with the flowering plant of your choice from a local garden center.
Yeah, good idea. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org, and we'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. It is Gardening This Morning with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. If you have a question, comment, or you want to share some advice with us, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Jane writes, it's Jane from Eastham. I am curious about why beech plums are plentiful in one year and all but absent in another. This year seems to be a very poor year for beech plums.
You know, back when I worked at the Extension Service as the agent, that was one question we got quite frequently. And the answer is actually fairly simple. On years when they're in bloom, if we have lots of rainy weather, the bees are not actively pollinating the plants, so you do not get a good set of fruit. And this year, we actually had a fair amount of rain earlier in the spring when they were in bloom. So it's to be expected that we wouldn't have the same sort of bumper crop we would have if it was beautifully dry and sunny during the week or so that the plants are in bloom.
Right. Andrew says, I made a huggle bed, permaculture bed, in our garden in Falmouth last autumn after hearing about this on the local food report. We used the bed for peas and beans this first year. These beds are meant to need less water than a typical garden bed, but we've not found that to be the case yet. Do you know if it typically takes a few years before we can enjoy the reduced watering benefits of a huggle bed?
Well, I am not really familiar with that type of a bed. I would think a lot of it would have to do with the amount of organic matter that is incorporated into the soil and the kind of mulch and depth of mulch that's being used. So that may be more of a factor in it requiring more water. I'm not sure how else to answer
that. Maybe check in with your local garden center. There might be somebody there who's a little more familiar with that. That's a good idea.
Permaculture, there's a lot of information online about permaculture. So certainly it's a subject well worth researching if you're interested in that type of growing.
Right. Teresa in Vineyard Haven says, just wondering if bunnies are eating my basil. Partial leaves are eaten, also holes in leaves, reducing my pesto choices.
Oh, yes. I don't think it's rabbits. I have not seen rabbits in my experience going after basil, but there is an insect that spends the night, spends the day in the very top layer of the soil or under the mulch. It's called the Asiatic garden beetle. And it's a member of the same family that includes oriental beetles and Japanese beetles. And it's, maybe less than a half an inch long, a very pretty sort of bright reddish chestnut brown color. And it comes out at night and it feeds on foliage. And frequently we see at this time of year lots of holes in leaves that can be attributed to it. We also have earwigs, of which there are millions in my garden.
Oh, they're everywhere, yeah.
Yes, and they also will eat foliage, creating holes. Captain Jack's would be helpful, although I hesitate to spray basil, particularly if you're going to be picking and eating it. Captain Jack's is completely non-toxic, but, you still want to avoid spraying something you're going to be picking and eating fairly quickly.
Yeah.
You could try some diatomaceous earth. That may be helpful. And just a word about diatomaceous earth, it's not the kind that's used in swimming pools.
Right.
That's not what you want to use. You want to actually use the horticultural grade diatomaceous earth.
Right. My herb garden is looking fabulous, except for one plant. My basil's beautiful. I have mint, rosemary, sage. My sage comes back year after year. It's huge, gigantic, thyme.
Mine bloomed this year. It was gorgeous.
It's beautiful, but my bay leaves, every single leaf, the dill looks good. Every single leaf off my bay leaf plant, gone. Just sticks. So somebody likes bay leaves.
That is interesting. Do you have it in a pot or
No, it's
ground?
It's in the ground.
And it comes back year after year?
No, you have to bring it in. But but I put it out and, something ate every single leaf.
I might next year put it in a pot.
Yeah, see what happens. Exactly.
Keep it on your deck.
Exactly.
It could be bunny.
Yeah, I think it's the bunny because I have seen that baby bunny hopping through. I know they supposedly don't like the smell of mint. Let me tell you, that baby bunny runs in that mint all the time. So
the thing about mint as a repellent, the mint that is generally used, it's a peppermint oil. It's not the actual dried foliage of the plant. It's an oil derived from peppermint. And you can buy sachets that are filled with like ground corn cobs or something and permeated with the peppermint oil. In my experience, I find it works really well as a repellent for mice in an enclosed space.
Right. That makes sense.
If you have it out in the open, that fragrance dissipates very quickly. So in drawers, in closets, small closets in the kitchen, it's worked very well for me. Before I got these two young kitties I now have, I had quite a mouse problem. It's under
control. Now the cats take care of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Pamela's giving us a call from New Bedford. Hi, Pamela.
Hi.
Hi.
I can empathize with you in regards to the rabbits.
They're everywhere.
I bought $100 worth of seedlings in the spring, and every one of them was eaten. So now, we have cages.
Yes.
But we live in the city. We live in the city, so my husband just put hardware cloth, on the bottom of our fence that, was around the property. So that We haven't had any rabbits since he did that. Huh. But I have perennial geraniums.
Yes.
And they're not blooming as prolifically as they did last year. They have spots, sort of black spots on the leaves. One of them is Roxanne, and I can't remember the name of the other. It's a pink perennial geranium that if I, you know, knock off the faded blooms, it just keeps blooming all summer, but it's not blooming. And I've cut out the, you know, leaves that I could and thin the plant out, but I don't know what to spray on it.
How much sun are they getting?
They're getting enough.
Yeah. Okay. And do you have, is there a lawn irrigation system where they might be hit by the spray?
No.
And I think I like your idea of cutting out some of the foliage. What that does is that increases the air circulation, so the foliage, when it does rain, which we actually have had a lot of downpours, when you have better air circulation, the foliage dries off. It sounds like it's a leaf spot of some sort, which is generally fungal in nature. And you might visit your local garden center and pick up maybe Neem Max, which is a good organic solution for both insects and many fungi. Or you could go, I probably would avoid a straight fungicide because generally this is a seasonal thing. It may happen this year but not next year. A lot of it is related to how wet the foliage gets. And it seems we have had a lot of rain.
And that humidity, too.
Yes.
Pamela, good luck with that. Thanks for the call. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Susan from Orleans says, I just purchased my first hibiscus plant. How do I care for it as the season progresses? Do I cut it back in the fall, bring it inside? It is in and will remain in a pot.
So I'm going to assume this is the tropical hibiscus, not the perennial hibiscus.
That's what I was thinking.
Yes. It wants a full sun. I probably would not cut it back now unless it's like a stick. If it's full and has nice branching, then don't bother trimming it back. If it's skinny and only a few stems, yes, you could cut it back and you'll get a bushier plant. I would make sure it's getting plenty of light, and since it's in a container, you do want to make sure it doesn't dry out. Now, I just said we've had lots of rain. We don't have to irrigate our gardens as much as in the past. Containers still need to be checked on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And when we have this really hot weather, particularly when it's windy, which we've also had a lot of, those containers will dry out quite quickly. So pay attention to watering. I would probably leave it outside until late September, and then I would bring it in and put it in a cool place and let it go dormant. It's hard to keep them growing actively over the winter. Yeah. The way I've done it in the past is I keep them upstairs and just sort of let them not dry out, but hold off and reduce the amount of water, reduce the amount of light they're getting. And when they start shedding their leaves, I put it in the basement where it's probably about 45 or 50 degrees down there in the winter.
And they can look pretty raggedy by the time spring comes around, you know, when they start dropping leaves. So don't worry about once it starts dropping leaves, doesn't mean it's dead. You know, when you put it in the spring, when you, you know, give it more sunshine and water, it'll come back to life.
And that's when you cut it back.
Yeah.
You know, bring it out into the light and the warmth and start watering, cutting it back, water it, fertilize it next spring. And you can continue having that as a gorgeous tropical plant for some time.
Yeah. All right. Al in South Yarmouth says, I'm trying to avoid a trip to the ER. What's the best advice for sharpening pruning shears? Can they be safely sharpened or should I just replace with a new one? If you recommend sharpening, any recommendations on where to take it? A lot of hardware stores do that, don't they?
Hardware stores can do that. Any knife sharpening place can do that. I have these little, I don't even know what to call them. They're like a diamond file. They're a flat file. I got them from Johnny's Seed years ago. One, and they're two different grits. One is a little rougher and one is finer. And I just use that to sharpen the blade. And it seems to work pretty well. My pruners are they're old and trusty, but I do have to sharpen them on an annual basis. And even depending on how much pruning, particularly of woody plants that I'm doing, I may have to sharpen them during the growing season as well. So you can buy tools and do it yourself, or you could check with your local hardware store and see what they do for sharpening.
All right. Heather and Chilmark says, something is gnawing off and breaking the smaller lower branches of my beech plum bushes. A couple of years ago, I surrounded them with wire fencing in case it was a deer, leaving or open at the bottom so I can still cut the weeds that grow around them. The bushes are doing better with the fencing, but this gnawing off of lower, smaller branches is still happening. Often the branches left, leaves and all at the base of the bush. What could be doing this?
Woodchuck, rabbit. Either one of those would easily gnaw a younger stem, not a really tough woody stem. I put out a new rose this year, and as it began to grow, all the stems got gnawed off. And judging from the angle of the cut on the stem, usually a rabbit is sort of an angled cut. It was rabbits,
yeah.
So it's quite possible that's what's doing it.
And depending on how much space is left there at the bottom, it could still be a deer sticking their little nose underneath there.
It very well could still be a deer. Yeah.
And it's interesting, especially when you look on Nantucket, the deer population is so, they're starving, so they'll eat a lot of things that people say are deer-proof, they'll eat it.
A hungry deer has no dislikes. It will eat whatever it can. Even, you read a lot about spiny plants not being preferred deer food. Well, hollies fall into that category. A hungry deer will eat a holly.
Yep, eat anything, right. All right, so heading into the vegetable garden, my cobra beans are looking great. Carl from Acushnet, Roberta sent us those seeds. So nice of him, Carl. Thank you. I haven't got any beans yet, but
That's fabulous. I'm glad to hear that. I unfortunately didn't get mine planted.
Well, it's great. My grandson and I made this like 6-foot kind of pole thing for it. It's already over the top of that.
Yes,
lots of flowers.
Quite
so
tall.
Yeah, I can't wait to try them. So I'm excited for that. But I planted my second crop of wax beans.
Yummy.
Yeah, so they're coming up pretty well. And I'm sure there are a lot of folks saying, "Ooh, I didn't get around to that. What can I still plant?" You can still plant green beans, wax beans, right?
Yes, what's remaining of the pea stems, I am actually going to pull out, and I'm going to plant just some bush beans in that area. Most beans are ready in about 60 days. We certainly have 60 days of growing season. In fact, we have a lot more than that. So if I plant them now, I'll probably start picking towards the end of August. So you could also, even if you get a quick growing variety of zucchini, if you've lost your zucchini, you could replant that. You can plant beets. You can plant carrots. It's a great time if you've started seedlings of broccoli or cabbage or Brussels sprouts. It's a great time to get those outside and for a fall harvest. So if you stagger planting different things, you can get a succession of plants going and keep your garden going well into the fall.
Yeah. And radishes, of course. I also planted watermelon radishes. Have you planted those before?
I have not grown those. They look very
awesome.
Interesting.
Yeah, they're great. I love them.
I think they're a type of daikon radish, one of the Japanese radishes.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
And so they look very interesting. They're very pretty when you cut them open.
Exactly, yeah. And I have my cucumbers. I did them in a container this year with a trellis. Loads of flowers, but I don't have any cucumbers.
Are they mostly male flowers?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'd go check them out. Sometimes in the heat, if they're not pollinated as soon as they open, they just shrivel up and fall off. Mm. So that's a potential. Mm. Some plants start reducing how many they produce in a really hot weather. My cucumbers have been going gangbusters. I've got a whole giant container sitting in brine in my refrigerator. So I'm not having a problem with
cucumbers,
but they're in the ground. They're not in a container.
Yeah, I've never done it in a container before. I thought I'd try it this year and do an experiment and see how it goes.
Yeah.
Remember last year and the year before, I think I did the straw bales.
Yes.
I didn't do that again. It, you know, it's kind of a mess at the end when, you know, it's like, I'm like, oh, now I got to clean up this big old mess.
And, a lot of work for little results.
Yeah, and it's very smelly in the beginning when you have to get the bales, you know, ready for planting. And so I decided not to do that this year.
Well, you know, I give you credit for trying it. I always like to try something new. So kudos.
Yeah. You'll know what works and what doesn't work. That's it. We always have to be experimenting out there in the garden, right?
Yes.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. It's Gardening This Morning with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Let's talk about the tomatoes. How are your tomatoes looking?
I'm harvesting.
Oh, I've only been harvesting the cherry tomatoes so far. I have some nice green ones.
Only cherry tomatoes. I will admit that. I've got one variety, which is my second year growing it, and it's fabulous. I'm not a big fan of grape tomatoes. Mm-hmm. I don't buy them at the market. I find them not really flavorful, and they have a tough skin. Mm-hmm. This is a fantastic grape tomato called Valentine.
Ooh.
And it is prolific. I have been picking it for a couple of weeks now. Wonderful flavor. So it's on my list for a regular entry in my garden.
I'm going to have to put it on my list because I'm with you. I always think it's that tough skin kind of, and it's not really worth it. But and I have the, you know, what are they called? The sun gold, the yellow cherry tomatoes, and then the regular red ones. And I really like those yellow sun gold tomatoes.
I grow sun sugar, which is almost identical to sun gold, except it has less crack. Than sun gold.
Okay.
So I've substituted it for a number of years now for sun gold. I'm also picking it sort of a long cherry tomato. It's not a grape, but it looks like a mini San Marzano, only it's sort of a pinky gold called blush.
Ooh.
That is quite good. And I have one regular tomato that is just starting to change color. So that will be ready to pick probably by the end of the week. But I do want to mention one particular squash. If people really enjoy a summer squash or zucchini, I highly recommend growing the variety Magda. It is what's called a Lebanese zucchini, and it's gray. It's not green, and it tends to be fairly small. But every flower is, the word just jumped out of my mind. It pollinates itself, it doesn't require pollination, and it sets fruit. And so I have been picking Magda, 3, 4, 5, almost 5 weeks now.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
It's just been an to the point where I'm giving it away because there's just so much of it.
Yeah.
But it seems every single flower bears a beautiful, small, gray, zucchini-like fruit. They're very firm when you cook them, very nutty flavor.
Yeah.
And if you only have space for one summer type squash,
that's the one.
This is the one to grow because you will have it coming out your ears.
Oh, good. I have to put that on my list too. All right, let's talk to Peter, who's calling from Plymouth. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Good morning.
Speaker. Can you hear me? Okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Hi. What can you tell me about Leland cypress trees and yellow tip disease?
Leland cypress are these very, very fast-growing evergreens that have almost been planted to the point where they're overplanted right now. And there is a fungal disorder that has crept in to them over the past decade. So they frequently they start off with brown tips, and the brown just moves back into the branches. they get to be so large, there's really not a lot that someone, as you know, a homeowner can do. It's very difficult to apply a fungicide on them and get adequate coverage. You would probably have to contract with a tree service to take care of that. But that is a growing problem with Leyland cypress. The other problem with Leyland cypress is in high winds, they will come down at some mm-hmm. point, the bigger they get. They're not all that stable. I had 8 large Leyland cypress. I took them all down. I decided I didn't want them there anymore, and I didn't want, they were getting the brown tips. They were starting to look bad, and so I made the choice to just eliminate them. But you would really, in order to control that, you would really need to have a tree service come in and make an application.
The only tree service that has anything close to that and doesn't really work with Save a Tree. And so I get like a, it's like 65 feet long and they're like 40 feet high. I've already had them trimmed twice.
Wow. Boy.
What I do is I put heavily in the spring, I put aluminum sulfate on them and put a 10-10-10. It seems to kind of keep it under control.
Mm. Yeah, the 10-10-10 is a fertilizer, and the aluminum sulfate acidifies the soil. Those are big trees, and mm-hmm. obviously they're there for a good windbreak, I would assume, and you wouldn't want to lose them. My other advice would be to trim them as much as you can to allow for good air penetration and air circulation. But again, in a wet year, there's not a lot you can do to have the foliage dry off rapidly.
Yeah. Peter, thank you for the phone call.
Are they a warm weather tree? Because all of a sudden, because of the global warming, they seem to be doing better. And I've got it. The yellow tip disease sort of under control. Before, when I first moved into this place, I'd say you could walk in between them. Now you can't. But I was just wondering if there's anything to eliminate the yellow tip disease.
Yeah, you know, you could try, again, thinning them out. They originally were only planted down south. They do like the warmer weather. They grow quite rapidly. As our local climate has gotten warmer and warmer and warmer, we're starting to see those southern diseases that we did not have up here when Leylands first started being planted, and now they are here. So it's just going to be something you have to either fight constantly or change plants.
Yeah. Peter, thanks for the call. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Carol in Falmouth says, how late can I harvest rhubarb? I generally try to fertilize it a bit after each cutting.
Technically, you know, it's thought you only harvest rhubarb in the spring. If you're not cutting a lot of the plant at any one time, you can harvest small amounts of stems right through the growing season. I'm not a rhubarb fan, so I don't eat rhubarb and don't know if the flavor changes in hot weather as opposed to the cold weather of spring. But I would think you would be able to harvest small amounts continuously.
All right, Roxanne in Nantucket says she just started using biofungicide. The active ingredient is giant knotweed. It's used as a preventative, not a cure. Any experience with this?
I am totally unfamiliar with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I haven't heard of it either. Yeah, don't know, Roxy. She stumped us.
Giant knotweed. It's based on a formulation of giant knotweed.
Hmm.
What was the name of it again?
She says biofungicide. No, I don't know what that is. But,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we do. That is carried at local garden centers. So it is available, but I really am unfamiliar with it as a preventative because I'm not familiar with this particular formulation. So that's something I'm going to have to look up.
Okay. I have to tell you about my unfortunate experience with a bumblebee.
Oh, no.
They're normally, you know, they don't bother you, right? I mean, I have been gardening in my garden forever. I think I've been stung once, which was my own fault, barefoot in the clover, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I was, my grandson and I got some new plants for some of the pots. And so I was pulling out some dead flowers, and this very mad bee came flying out. And unfortunately, my grandson waved his hands a little bit. I was like, don't wave your hands. Stung me one cheek, then the other cheek, and then about five times on my leg. This was a really, really mad bumblebee.
Wow.
Isn't that unusual?
Yes, that's very unusual.
So I thought, I wonder.
I frankly did not know that a bumblebee could sting more than once.
Yeah, I looked it up. They have a straight stinger, and so they can sting more than once. But what I thought was like, what made this bee so mad? And I thought maybe there was a nest in the pot, and I looked, but I only see this one bee. But I still see this one bee going in, and they're not really solitary bees. So I'm not sure what the deal is with this one bee, but I have given this bee a lot of room now.
Yes, I would definitely avoid it.
Like, who knew that? And fast, so fast.
And not repot that pot.
Yeah. I know. Right now, there's a little bit of grass and stuff growing out. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to leave it be.
Yeah. Oh, that's, I'm sorry.
I know.
It's also funny.
Yeah, it is sort of funny, especially when you've got all these bees and wasps flying around me all the time when I'm out in the garden, and I never give it a second thought. But now
no,
I do.
No, I don't either. And particularly with bumblebees, right, they generally are quite gentle.
Yeah. Maybe that's why this bee is alone. It's an angry, mean bee, and the rest of the bees are like, you're out.
There you go.
Peggy from Eastham says, hi, my oak leaf hydrangea looks very weighed down. How can I best prune it without losing its flower production?
Oak leaf hydrangea can be pruned immediately after it's done blooming. It probably still will look good, but you can prune it back at this time. Mine's been in bloom for about a week or so, and if I were going to prune it, I would be pruning it probably in about another week. Mm-hmm. And that would help to hold it up. Mine, I have quite a few of them. The ones that are more shaded are the ones that tend to bow down the most. I have two dwarf oak leaves. They're called ruby slippers. If anyone is looking for a small oak leaf hydrangea, these are perfect. They only get to be about 4 feet tall. Ooh. They do get quite wide. Mine have been in the ground probably 8 or 9 years, and they're probably about 4 feet wide as well as tall. But the stems are quite strong, and they hold all the blooms up. So that's a possibility, selecting a variety like ruby slippers. Otherwise, prune them back. Don't leave the flowers on them to dry out. Even though they're pretty and we enjoy them that way, just give them a good pruning. I actually have two fairly large oak leaf hydrangeas that I'm going to prune to the ground, going to give them a renewal pruning. They just are. I know trying to keep something small that wants to be big is not really practical, but I'm going to give it a whirl.
And you can bring the flowers inside. Put them in a vase. Yeah. All right. Susan's giving us a call from Wareham. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, every spring I plant nasturtium seeds in this one place, and they produce gigantic leaves, which often turn yellow, and very few flowers. And I don't understand why this is happening.
Hmm.
They get plenty of sun. And
what's the soil like?
It's a container. It's a raised bed, and I've always added good ingredients, and I wonder maybe it's too rich. I don't think nasturtiums like particularly rich soil. But
yeah, the size of the leaf would indicate it's obviously well fertilized if you've got really big leaves and few flowers.
I wonder, I'm watering. Do you water it a lot, Susan?
No. I mean, I water it when it needs it. I mean, and it gets rain. I will also say it's shared property, so the weeks can go by and I'm not here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
yeah.
It gets sun and it gets watered, or it gets rain, and we certainly had plenty of rain.
Yes, we have.
I suspect maybe the soil is too rich for them.
I'm going to agree with you on that. Most of the time, nasturtiums actually like a kind of a lean soil, and they like to run a little bit on the dry side. So it may be a combination of, you know, too nice a soil and a lot of rain just promoting a lot of leafy growth at the expense of flowers.
Yeah.
So when you say they're like a lean soil, if I was going to try them next year, say in a pot, what kind of soil should I use?
I would mean, just I use a straight potting soil like Happy Frog, which holds water but drains very well. And I probably would use a fairly low nitrogen type of fertilizer, a 5-10-10 type or something with an analysis where that first number is lower than the second
right.
or third number.
Low nitrogen.
Yeah. All right, Susan, good luck. Thanks.
Right.
Thanks for the call. Roxy in Nantucket sent a note on that biofungicide. She says it's called Regalia. R-E-G-A-L-I-A. So
all right.
Something
let me,
to look up. All right. And then Eric in Sandwich says, I have a young serviceberry tree that has had many leaves turn yellow and fall off, about 20%. Any idea what's going on?
Serviceberry is another name for shadbush, amelanchier, which is a native plant, but there are cultivated varieties that we put in our yards. It's really a beautiful small tree or large bush. It is, unfortunately, subject to rust fungus, which will cause it to defoliate. So I would suspect with all the rain this year that perhaps it came down with rust. One of my neighbors has an apple tree, and you can see this tree from, you know, down the street because it looks orange,
wow.
and the leaves are falling, and it was cedar apple rust. It's a different species of rust that gets on the amelanchier or serviceberry, but it will cause defoliation.
Mm.
So and after the fact, there's nothing you can do about it.
Right. I mentioned I took a couple of trees down where my hosta is now burning in the sun. And they were apple trees, and I took them down because I am so tired of cleaning up all of those apples in the fall, and I feel like they attract the rats. So I'm like, all right, we're done with the apple trees. So, but I'm thinking of planting another tree in its place. What do you think, fall or spring? Is there a better time for planting trees?
September is a wonderful time to plant trees. It's not as hot as the summer. We get regular rainfall, but the soil is warm, mm-hmm. which encourages good root growth. So I would say, pick a beautiful tree that you really love and plant it in September.
I was thinking of maybe something like an eastern redbud, but, you know, one of the smaller versions, not the one that gets 30 feet tall.
They do get big. Yeah. I'm so overplanted. I'm really need to start taking plants out because I have too many plants. But there is a redbud that I'm currently in love with, but I'm holding myself back. I don't want to buy it, even though I want it. And it's called Flamethrower.
Oh, I know that one. That's beautiful.
Isn't that gorgeous?
Yes.
It comes out, and at the end of the branches, it has these bright scarlet, purpley leaves mm-hmm. fading into sort of a golden foliage. I mean, it's a stunning plant.
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah. Maybe I will. No, I have another redbud in there, but it's one of those weeping ones, and it's only about maybe 7 feet tall, mm-hmm. or 7 feet mm-hmm. tall. But I want one that's not weeping. But there's a number of varieties of the redbud trees, so I'm just going to have to do a little research and find one that gets 10 to 15 feet tall. And I think, because in the spring, you just can't beat those beautiful flowers.
They're gorgeous.
Right? Yeah.
They're gorgeous.
And
yeah.
I was thinking cherry tree, but the cherry trees just don't last that long, right?
So, cherry trees, while very beautiful, are short-lived, and they also have a number of disease issues. I probably would not recommend planting a cherry. But they're, maybe a small stewardia, mm-hmm. Fairly slow-growing. Years down the road, they'll get big. But they're in bloom right now, so we don't have a lot of trees that bloom in midsummer.
That's true.
So that would be a good choice.
Another
or
option.
Maybe an encianthus, which again will get mines probably about 15, 18 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous in spring when it blooms, beautiful fall color, just a lovely. Lovely spring flowering shrub.
Thanks for the suggestions. Roberta Clark joins us once a month through the gardening season, third Tuesday of the month. Thanks, Roberta.
You're welcome.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.